Thanks for listening to Shift Your Spirits. I'm Slade Robertson. For 13 years, I've been a professional intuitive and personal development blogger. I try to talk about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. It is Saturday, January 5th, 2019, as I record this introduction. This week, I have an interview with the author of Sex, Drugs, and Mostly Yoga, Kara Leah Grant, who, in her new book, is asking the question, is it possible that a diagnosis of psychosis could actually be a Kundalini awakening? That's coming up in just a few minutes. For those of you who've been with me since 2006, you will remember Kara Leah and I having wonderful conversations in the blog comments of Shift Your Spirits and her site, Be Conscious Now. That was the social media of 12 years ago. And I would be remiss without acknowledging what an auspicious moment this is. We've never spoken before. We've known each other for 12 years, but it's all been written. It's all been text, which I guess is appropriate since we're both writers. But this is a big deal for us to get to speak. As always, there's an Oracle segment at the end of the show, so be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra channeled message. Before I forget, I do want to say a quick thank you to my newest supporter on Patreon, Stephanie Moss. I also want to say thank you to all of you who continue to pledge your support on Patreon. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and want it to continue. It's very encouraging to me and our transcriptionist, Linda, so thank you. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access a guided meditation called Messages from Your Spirit Guides, exclusive bonus episode, and there's also a mastery level of support where you can download one of my courses for free each month. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access all the extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. After ditching university, Kara Leah Grant spent her 20s traveling the world in search of adventure, creativity, and a tribe of like-minded souls. Sex, drugs, yoga, and music festivals were simply part of the fun until they weren't. Diagnosed as bipolar after leaping topless onto a moving logging truck in the wilderness of British Columbia, Kara Leah returns to New Zealand to heal her soul, face her past, and uncover the deep truths of her innermost being. I asked her how bad did it get when it really wasn't fun anymore.
That moment was waking up in a psych ward for the second time. So this was September 2004, and 4 weeks earlier, I'd ended up in the psych ward as well. But the second time I woke up, and I remember so clearly, I was in this little single bed right beside the door, and there was four beds to a room, so I was in there with other people, and I woke up knowing that my fiancé had broken up with me like 5 or 6 days before, knowing that because he'd broken up with me, I now didn't have anywhere to live, knowing that I was substantially in debt and I didn't have a job, and knowing that I'd been diagnosed bipolar, that I was back in a psych ward, that I was potentially, you know, that I was seen as crazy, that my whole life had imploded. And knowing that, so the second time I hadn't, the first time it had been triggered by taking LSD and mushrooms and ecstasy and weed and all the things. But this time I hadn't taken any drugs. So it was a sense of waking up going, I'm crazy again, and I can't blame the drugs, and I've been dumped by the person that was supposed to be there for me, and feeling like I had all this grief in my heart, but I was so afraid of being vulnerable that I couldn't express, you know, I couldn't express it even. There was like, there was nowhere to go because I was surrounded by people in the ward and in the room, and the sense of total implosion of life and nowhere to hide anymore, just nowhere to hide. It was a pretty painful moment in my life, I have to say.
So what switch sort of flipped in you to make you think, you know what, I'm going to share this story with everyone?
Well, I'd always been a writer, and I had journaled my whole life, and I had been working as a journalist in Whistler, British Columbia, where I was living. I was working as a waitress and as a journalist and as a go-go dancer, and then I'd quit waitressing to pursue writing full-time. I'd written a screenplay that had won a national award, but I was really struggling. I was struggling massively. I wasn't able to pitch myself. I had lots of stuff going on emotionally, so even though I was theoretically, you know, freelancing as a writer, there wasn't actually any money coming in. And so when I woke up in the psych ward, I had a journal with me, fortunately, that someone brought in and gave to me. She was like this angel. She literally showed up and she was like, oh, I know that you write, and I thought that you would appreciate having something to write in. And I didn't even know her that well. She was like an acquaintance of mine. And so I had this journal that she dropped off for me, maybe the first or second day that I was in the psych ward. And I just remember writing in my journal and writing out everything that had happened. And at the very end of writing that diary entry, there was like, it was like the surge of knowingness, like this energy. And I actually talk about this in the book, because this knowingness or this energy came through several times in my life since. And I just found myself writing down, the sun will shine again in my life. So there. And it was just this, almost this rebellious, like, you know what? Fuck you. You can't keep me down. All this shit that's happened to me, I will find my way back to the light. Just you wait and see. So that was there right at that moment. And I think that energy was what called me forth to find my way through. And I knew even back then that I would one day, that part of the journey was to share this story of mine with the public. Like, it was really important to write about it, because I was able to, I had such a gift, it was such a gift to experience psychosis from the inside, to really witness what the mind was like in that experience, and then to be able to recall it, and then to be able to articulate it in a way that other people could understand. So even then I had a sense of how important it was that I journal and write about my experiences of psychosis / awakening, because it was both.
So is it possible that what we would call psychosis or mental illness could also be a kundalini awakening? Tell me about that connection. So the other people may be experiencing one or the other and wondering.
Absolutely. So since then, my understanding from conversations I've had with different people and research that I've done, what can begin to happen for us, especially if we're dabbling in a combination, as I was, of yoga practices and meditation practices and ecstatic dance practices, combined with LSD or mushrooms or, you know, even weed, etc. All of these plants, medicines, they're so powerful. They really do impact our psyche and our consciousness. And if you combine them with things like yoga, meditation, and you haven't done the grounding work and the building of the witness of the container, and you haven't cleared out the psychological patterns from childhood, it blows your circuits, is one way to put it. It just blows your circuits. You're not ready and able to handle the amount of pure light and the amount of energy of kundalini that can start to move through the system. It's kind of like hooking up a regular old light bulb to 10,000 volts and expecting it to handle it. It just won't. You know, you've got to change your light bulb first. You've got to put in the 10,000 volt light bulb before you start channeling that much energy. But I didn't know any better, you know, and I know that there's so many people that are experiencing that convergence of awakening practices with plant medicines of various kinds without necessarily having done the psychological work necessary to stabilize their system and build strong enough channels to hold the flow.
That's a really great way of explaining it, actually. I love that. And I mean, gee, what are the chances that we will play with magic if we run across it and don't know what we're doing?
Oh my God. It's happening so often all over the place. I mean, people are doing ayahuasca.
Yeah.
You know, multiple times. And they don't necessarily have the follow-up care. They don't necessarily have the constructs or the context to understand how one then works with what is revealed and what comes up from the unconscious. And so people are just left hanging so often, and they can dissolve. They can disintegrate. They can fall apart and not know how to navigate that territory.
So how did you figure out how to recover from that or to retro-engineer the proper container, as you call it? How did you fix the container?
So I was fortunate in that because I already did have a yoga meditation practice, there was some part of me that intuitively knew that what I'd experienced wasn't just psychosis and that I wasn't necessarily bipolar, that was a Western labeling. And it was just this knowingness. And so I knew that yoga would help me to put myself back together mentally and emotionally. And right from the get-go, like I was in the psych ward and I would go out on the lawn and practice yoga. And that was my rock. That was the way that I built the container, which is like the ability to witness oneself in action so that I was able to, rather than be identified with my thoughts and identified with my feelings and identified with my body and the sensations in my body, I was able to orientate to the witness that I am and still experience the thoughts and the feelings in the body, but from a held place. So that I wasn't overwhelmed by the thoughts or overwhelmed by the feelings, I was able to hold myself while I felt what I needed to feel and while I learned how to observe my thoughts and then traced back to what was giving rise to the thoughts so that I could uninstall or unprogram myself from the constructs of a lifetime and beyond, really. Like all the programming from childhood, from family, from school, from society, all the stuff that is not who I truly am. So I just knew yoga was the way for me, and I practiced every single day. I was relentless in my practice of yoga.
So you were in British Columbia, though, when you were in the psych ward?
Yeah, I was at, I didn't know this at the time, but my experiences all happened during Lionsgate, the astrological period of Lionsgate that happens in August, and I was taken down to Lionsgate Hospital, the acute psych ward at Lionsgate Hospital, one of those interesting little, you know, coincidences, one might say. Yeah. And what was even more intriguing was that it all got triggered when I was at Shambhala Music Festival, and it was a Sunday morning, and I took acid that morning, not even a lot, maybe a quarter of a tap. I never took a lot of acid, but I took acid, and I went into the yoga class on acid, and we went into lion's pose, which I'd never done in my life before. And I remember quite distinctly doing three rounds of lion's pose with lion's breath. And that, it was literally like, that was the moment that something in me went into the awakening process. It was like an activation. And I literally stood up from the class. I kind of looked at the teacher. And I do recall her looking at me strangely. But I was just like, I'm done. I've got what I needed from this. And I left the yoga class. And from that moment on, I started to go through the awakening that eventually devolved into the psychosis over the next 5 or 6 days. So it was like from lion's pose to lion's gate to lion's gate.
How long were you in that ward?
So the first time I was there for just 3 days, and they basically sedated me, and they saw that because I'd gone into that ward that time speaking some kind of ancient language and doing prostration, like my body was going into spontaneous prostration to the sun god Ra. That, I mean, I'd never been taught this, but it was just coming through my system. Like I knew how to do these things spontaneously. And so the doctor, the first doctor I saw, the psychiatrist, he was kind of onto it because he called it spiritual burglary. He's like, you've opened some doors you shouldn't have opened. Here's some medication. Don't do that again. Don't take any more drugs. And oh, by the way, you're bipolar, so take this medication and see you later. So it was only 3 days. The second time, which was exactly a month later, it was on the new moon both times. The second time, partly because it was my second time and there was no drugs that had precipitated it, I was in there for 9 days. It took me longer to convince them that I was sane enough to let out again into the community.
So at that point, you traveled back home to New Zealand, right?
Yeah, I had no choice. I mean, I didn't have any money. I had nowhere to live. My fiance had broken up with me. Like I needed to just come home. I didn't want to. I so did not want to. Like I was leaving. I'd lived in British Columbia for 7 years. I love that place. I love the mountains. I love the land. And I had amazing friends. I felt connected and I felt good there. I felt like I could be me there. and coming back to New Zealand, it was like stepping back into all the old constructs and all the old expectations and assumptions of who I was meant to be and how I was meant to act. And yeah, I didn't want to come home.
Oh, I came home too after, you know, it took me a couple years from the time that I had my stroke to move back here, but I really did come home to just sort of survive, you know, to heal and to build back from square one. But that's, of course, you know, when I started Shift Your Spirit. So we were experiencing that in parallel as well. I mean, I'm only just now realizing that because I didn't know you when all that was going on. I only know you as you started to, you know, build this online presence that you have and how we met. So, but yeah, my 2004-2005 was probably very similar to yours in many ways, but it was I had to, you know, it was like, oh, I'm back here, back to square one. Did you feel like that a little bit?
Oh my god, it was awful. I felt like I'd left the excitement and the adventure and the awesomeness and the aliveness of life, and I was back in this dead place where nothing was happening and I was nobody and there was nothing. And it was like, and I wasn't even like, my mum had moved. So like we'd lived in Dunedin when I was a teenager, which is like a university town of about 100,000 in the South Island. She'd moved to this small mountain town with 400 people in the interim. So when I came back home, I was coming back to a place where I had no, it was completely different. It was a different house, it was a different town, you know. But in that respect, it was actually amazing because the mountains and the lakes, like the nature was so beautiful, so powerful. And it was that landscape that really helped me to heal, being in the mountains again of Queenstown, New Zealand. It was extraordinary. But yeah, didn't want to be there. Did not want to be there.
I credit the mountains with bringing me back as well. I came back to the Appalachians where I grew up, and very, very powerful. One of the oldest geological features in the world, I have since learned. And so the very ancient mountains that have been worn down, you know, for just millennia. So there's layers and layers of kind of magic here, you know, the Smoky Mountains is how they're commonly known. So yeah, I had something similar going on where I almost had to choose to reconnect to the landscape and let go of like whatever attachments that I used to have to it and sort of redefine it in a new way and kind of romance this whole, you know, place I didn't want to be in, but here I am. So how can I love it? Did you do something similar? Did you reinvent yourself in that way?
Yeah, I just remember, like, I was sleeping every day till like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was just trying to like numb myself out as much as I could. And the only thing I had to numb out with was sleep, really, because I wasn't taking, you know, any drugs or anything like that anymore. And I wasn't distracting myself with internet or movies. But I just remember having the sense of like, I need to move. And so I started forcing myself. There was a trail around the lagoon. So I was like, right, I just have to get out and I've got to run for 100 meters. And every day there was these orange markers at 50 meters every interval around the lagoon. So I would run one more marker each day. And that was my way of like forcing myself to be present and to kind of exist or to interact with life again. And I remember really, really clearly that the day when I finally ran the whole way around, and it was probably only 2 kilometers, maybe three, it wasn't very far. But I was so ecstatic about the fact that I'd done it that I turned around and ran back around the whole way and did a double loop on that same day. And that commitment to being in the landscape and running and walking the landscape was part of what helped me begin to heal. That and the yoga. But there's something about the physical movement, getting the endorphins and the serotonin going in the brain again, that really helped me begin that journey of healing.
Oh, yes. Thank you for saying that. I am very late to the game in discovering my athleticism, but I didn't start working out until I was 41, and that was when I stopped smoking. And I chose yoga as a replacement therapy for smoking. And so my connection and discovery of yoga is I was trying to think you know, with a habit, especially an addiction, what are you going to put in that hole if you take it out? You know, there's got to be something else to go there, some kind of replacement behavior. And I tried to think of, like, what was the thing that was symbolically connected to smoking, but that could somehow be healthy. And I came to the conclusion that it was the breath, and that I just had this intuition. I'd done yoga before, you know, as a smoker, you know, or whatever, you know, never stuck. But I instinctively knew, like, oh, yes, that's the thing. That's the thing that'll heal me and ground me in my body in a new way. And I was just passionately into it for, you know, maybe 4 years or so, you know, doing it 5 days a week. And, you know, I really do credit that with changing my relationship with, you know, my breath. And it's crazy to think that, you know, I was still writing all the things that I write and doing spiritual work. And so I don't want people to think, like, oh, you have to be perfect to be, like, doing this kind of work. You don't. You just have to be on the journey of improving yourself. If you're only going to, you know, if you've got one plan to get to one orange marker around the lake, then you're okay. You're on the path. But yeah,
That was it. Just because that was just having that sense of change every day, of aiming for something, of achieving something. It gave me an anchor. Well, something to get out of bed for, in a way.
Well, the whole idea that you said about the container and the metaphor of the light bulb being plugged into, you know, too much energy is really cool, because I actually have this thing called an energy reboot, because so many of my clients will come to me really frazzled. They're spending so much time in their upper chakras. They're, like, always in the third eye, always trying to get that divine crown open. You know, they're just way up here. If you could see me, I'm waving my hands above my head. And you know, it's a very top heavy kind of energy, and they come in sort of burnt out and all over the place. And I always say, you know, you need to unplug and plug back in and start at the bottom, you know, and light yourself up, you know, from the root back up. And to me, the way that I do that is through athleticism, through really, really basic stuff like walking meditation. Even if you can't run around the lake, you can sure as hell walk around the lake. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a big part of my journey as well, realizing that I had just blown wide open through my heart and through third eye and through the crown, all of that. And I was so blocked through third, second, third chakras. And so that was a big part of why I went from awakening, feeling the oneness, the bliss, understanding life in such a deep way, into psychosis and right back into conditioned mind. And now it felt like, it literally felt like going from being in heaven to being in hell. And it was then that the hard work of recognizing, in order for me to experience that degree of openness and connection and bliss again, I had to clear out the lower chakras. I had to face my humanness and do the work of learning how to be with and meet reality as it was moment to moment.
So let's fast forward a little bit and come into the present and fast forward this journey where you've taken all this to. Now you are primarily a retreat leader, correct?
Yeah, I write books and I run retreats and I work with people online with mentoring programs and awakening programs. So that is, yeah, my primary thing is working with people in some way, supporting them on that journey, that emergence from, I kind of call it like coming out of the matrix in a way. It's when people begin to wake up and everything begins to shift and change for them, and they don't know. They need context, they need framework, and they need tools in order to navigate that journey of emerging into a new way of being with reality.
What are the patterns that you see people who are coming to you for this kind of assistance, support? What kind of patterns are you noticing in your clients? What are they bringing in?
Yeah, so let me just feel into that for a second. What kind of patterns? So often what will happen is that people will begin to experience life in a new way. So they'll begin to become more aware of things but those things are still occurring. Like, they'll begin to notice or become aware that, for example, that they're a people pleaser or that they let people treat them like a doormat. And so there's greater awareness of themselves in action, but they're not able to shift it or change it. And with that greater awareness, so often there comes heavy judgment and shame and guilt and fear. So they come to me because they're starting to wake up, and it feels awful because the judgment and the guilt and the shame and all of those things get triggered. So a big part of what I'm doing with people is I talk a lot about anchoring into love and truth, where I hold a space or a field of unconditional love in such a way that however they show up, whatever they're experiencing is completely okay, so that when they can then feel that coming from me, they're able to start to feel that for themselves, and they start to recognize that so much of their suffering is not because of what's happening in their lives or not because of what's happening inside of them, but it's because of how they are perceiving and how they are judging themselves. And so once they feel me being in an unconditional loving space for them, they can, like, it's almost like feel the imprint of that, so they can then begin to feel their own unconditional sense of love for themselves as they are with whatever's going on inside of them.
Mm. So for somebody listening right now who's not in New Zealand, are you able to do this kind of work with people over the phone or over Skype or wherever they might be?
Yeah, I work on Zoom. So I do a lot of work internationally with people in the States, Canada. And I also do a retreat every year in Mexico, which of course is for my Canadian and American friends so that they can come spend time.
I didn't realize that you did them so close.
I do one in Mexico. And it's amazing because, I mean, when people come on retreat with me, what I'm doing is I am very clear about setting up a super strong container on the energetic, emotional, mental realms, because what I've realized is that the stronger the container, the more held and supported and seen that people feel. It's like it activates them and it supports them to be able to let go, surrender, dissolve that which no longer serves them. So it's almost as if, I mean, I don't even do any, sometimes it feels like I don't do anything on the retreat, but of course what I'm doing is holding that strong container, and I set up a framework of basically explaining reality from a different perspective than most people perceive it, and they get it. They're like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. So then on the retreat, they begin to explore interacting with reality from that new framework, and they begin to see the benefits and feel the benefits of being in that new way. So it gives them an opportunity to step into and to be with themselves and be with reality in a different way. So that my intention is when they go back to their ordinary life, that they're able to bring that new way of being into their ordinary life. So it's not the kind of retreat where you just go away and you chill out and then, you know, you go home again. It's actually about creating a new way of being from the inside out that you can take with you.
What do you hope that you can contribute to the greater conversation about spirituality and personal development?
My intention is to really help people learn how to be with the darkness and the shadows and the fears. Because what I've seen a lot, especially in spiritual New Age circles, is there can be this, like you talked about, this escape into the upper chakras and this fear or unwillingness to be with the heavier, darker, so-called negative things. And yet, the only way through into a very grounded, heart-connected, clear way of being is to get super comfortable with feeling the guilt, the shame, the fear, the anxiety, the depression, all of those things, being able to be with it so that you can move through it. And so that's my intention, is to give people the framework and the tool so they know how to be with the challenging stuff for themselves, which then means they can actually be with other people who are going through challenging stuff and simply hold space for other people. So other people can then be with the challenging stuff. And so there's like a chain reaction of human beings being able to be with the hard stuff and it be okay.
The book is called Sex, Drugs, and Mostly Yoga, Field Notes from a Kundalini Awakening by Kara Leah Grant. Tell everybody where they can find you online and find out about your work and your retreats and all your stuff.
So the best place to find me is on my website, which is just karalea.com, K-A-R-A-L-E-A-H. So there's no hyphen, even though my name has a hyphen, the website doesn't. So karalea.com. And if you Google me, you'll find me on Amazon. I've got a couple of other books, and I'm on YouTube, and I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Instagram. And I'm blessed with a unique name. I've never found anyone with my name, so it is pretty easy to find me online if you Google my name.
That was great, Kara Leah. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Slay. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about all this stuff.
Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, transcripts, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, or whatever app you prefer. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. Calendars are arbitrary things. We impose time and dates onto the more magical cycles of nature, the seasons, the phases of the moon. Every new season, you have an opportunity to start something. Every new moon, every new day. You didn't miss some magical manifestation window. It's only a matter of hours before you can try again. The big secret, which you already know, is that you can always start over right now. And I'll talk to you later.